And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT, just like the man said, 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. Hi, I'm Phil.
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
Phil and I, that would be Phil and Phil, we're going to talk about the developing danger in what the British call Middle East. I'm going to work on learning to say West Asia, because this grew out of colonialism, the idea that it's the Middle East, that was British, that the world was British at the time, and there were red flags all over the earth, and they were all British. And so for them, the middle place called, say, Jerusalem or Iraq was, to them, the Middle East. Actually, it's West Asia. And so just as we're having broad struggles over the right of people to self-determination, the respect for the sovereignty and integrity of territory of states, that's what we're having now, as struggle between the neocolonialists who wish to reconquer the earth and those who do not wish to be reconquered. So we're going to be talking about that, and we will be touching on the issue of the assassination of the Iranian general, which precipitated the current anxiety and crisis, and then further involving country of Canada, country of Ukraine, and others, because a Ukrainian airliner was shot down in Iran. We're going to talk about that. But want to make sure we start by announcing kind of the sort of things that people ought to consider when they, the listeners of the Taylor Report and to CIUT, and that is, what do you do? What do we do about these situations, and what do we say about them? And there is going to be a No War on Iran event in Hamilton on the 25th, and it will be, that's a Saturday, and it's going to be at 1 p.m. at the Federal Building, which is at 55 Bay Street North in Hamilton. Now, there's also going to be on that weekend, we'll get the other updates for the demonstration scheduled for Toronto and actually cities around the world. But for this is sort of an early spring for North Americans, because at long last, after all these years of neocolonial wars, so-called humanitarian intervention, regime change, the destruction not only of governments, but the destruction of economies, of entire societies, left in shambles by British, French, American bombers, who, by the way, they're very interested in Russian bombers, but they're the ones who decided regime change was okay and that they would go forward with that. And Canada, by the way, has been a player, very proudly, in the case of Libya, bombed the bejesus out of Libya. We have also Libyan news. We will take that up. So, but at any rate, there's that announcement in Hamilton on Saturday, January the 25th at 1 o'clock at the Federal Building at 55 Bay Street North. There will be a demonstration. We will get you some other peace or demonstrations that are scheduled to come up, because really this... One of the things that causes us a lot of problems is that people tend to go into the helpless mode and say, well, you know, I don't know, and they just put their hands over their ears or watch football, but they don't want to think about it, or what they think about is their helplessness. And people are not helpless, but they have to decide what they want. So there's that one. There is also, Phil, there's a new book out, and there's going to be a talk at the different book list. The title of the book is Israel, Palestine, and the Politics of Race. And the authors are Yasmin Abu Laban and Abigail B. Bakan. And this is going to be coming up. So you have the details.
Yes, it'll be this coming Friday, January 17th at 7 p.m. at a different book list, 779 Bathurst Street. And the commentators, there's four of them. Sedef Arat Kotz, Department of Politics and Public Administration at Ryerson, Chandni Desai, Equity Studies at New College, Dan Freeman Malloy from University of Quebec at Montreal, and Joe Kelly, the History Faculty at Athabasca University, moderated by Alan Sears, Professor and Chair of the Department of Sociology at Ryerson. So that's a bunch of heavy hitters. Dan Freeman Malloy, of course,
is a panel.
Dan Freeman Malloy, of course, was very famous in Toronto once because when he was an undergrad at York University, he was rusticated, which was the word that they used, for his pro-Palestinian activities. They expelled him from the campus, and they used this quaint term from Oxford, rusticated, which meant sent to the countryside to learn the error of your ways.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think he's learned them.
He's back.
He's one of the panelists.
Well, I'm glad, again, that's Friday.
Friday the 17th.
17th.
At 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
Different book list.
And the street address?
779 Bathurst Street, just very close to Bloor Street. Easy to get to.
Just south of Bloor on the east side.
Yeah.
And there's a really nice venue for this kind of meeting that's just so pertinent. And again, this is a matter of making sure people activate themselves and decide. We have a real serious crisis, in my opinion, and we're going to just basically review some facts during this show and talk about what ought to be done. It's the best question. It wasn't Lenin that made up the phrase, "What is to be done?" That was the title of his famous pamphlet, but Leo Tolstoy had asked the same question previous, and a Russian novelist named Chernyshevsky had written a novel with that title. And it's always the best question, what are you supposed to do? And to start with this matter of the Islamic Republic and the United States, President Trump, Prime Minister Trudeau, I would say we have to decide whether you want peace or war. And President Trump decided he wanted war. He decided, he says he did, to, using his language, to take out, to remove somebody by murder, by assassination. The person he chose to do that, and of course he took out 10 people. 10 died in the attack in Baghdad near an international airport. And they assassinated not only General Soleimani, of Iran, but also a major leader of an Iraqi government militia. When I say government, it's very important to get. We're going to get at neocolonialism here. The individual who was killed was one who had led a Iraqi militia that fought the terror group called ISIS. And it is not a dispute. So, and of course, Soleimani was in Iraq at the invitation of the Iraqi government. And that leads to a really important question for Canada. That assassination, of course, was an act of war in the eyes of the Islamic Republic. It was calculated. They did choose where to do it. I urge you to read the important columnists, people who really know what they're talking about. Sharmeen Narwani, of course, our friend, the author, Zafar Benghash, you really need to read. You also need to read Scott Ritter, former U.S. Marine officer. He was an investigator who was one of those who was supposed to find the weapons of mass destruction and that Iraq allegedly possessed, and he said they didn't possess those weapons, and it was proved to be right, and therefore has been put in down the memory hole, and everybody's forgotten that he exists. Scott Ritter writes and talks about these things, and he's been very following this issue very, very closely. So let's move to the problems at hand. And because our headlines are full of discussion of the Ukrainian airliner shot down outside Tehran, took off from Tehran Airport, this has become a diversion away from the more serious question, which is war and peace, and what do you want? And unfortunately, tragedies become weaponized. They get interpreted and twisted or discussed in a way to try to produce and promote the position of one entity or another. And the most first fact to remember, in now that we're talking about what to do over the as a result of the plane shoot down, etc., is that the Iraqi parliament has voted for all foreign powers to leave soldiers, military, to leave Iraq. That includes you, Canada. That includes you, UK. And Donald Trump has said he might leave, but of course he would charge Iraq and sanction them, because that's the way he does things. That is hideous, actually, but that's his position. He also says he thinks that America does too much heavy lifting, and so he wants NATO now to take the responsibility for being in Iraq. NATO letters stand for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and I want to explain to our listeners that the Persian Gulf is not in the North Atlantic. It is quite a long way away. There is nothing in the charter of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization that gives it this power, but there is imperial arrogance, which permits German leaders, French leaders, British leaders, and American leaders to talk about where they're going to put their troops. The general presently commanding the handful of NATO forces that are actually in Iraq at this moment is Canadian, everybody likes to point out. It's mainly just done for looks. But it is a dangerous look because it's a presence. If any of them are struck, if something happens, then it becomes a matter of having to do something. Incidentally, this is to show you the madness of Canadian media. They talk about Trump as an isolationist. They say, oh, he wants to retreat. Well, if he says NATO should take over Iraq, that isn't a retreat. That's just a repositioning of imperial forces, the agreed group that inherited the earth after World War II. Not counting Russia, of course, which was fired from the group and told to go home. But British, French, and United States give themselves the power, authority to do what they want. And when I say that, I mean extra legal. There is no legal basis at all. But to go back, the Iraqi parliament has voted for foreign troops to leave the country. Here's how the Canadians and the Americans and the British answer that. They say, or talk about it, they say, the militias that fought ISIS, that's who they fought. They fought the terrorists. We spoke to Zafar Benghash on the show last week. Zafar affirmed, and I know that 2014 is ancient history, but in 2014, long before you were grown up, 2014, we saw these white trucks with the flying black flag of ISIS racing towards Baghdad, and they said, oh, the Iraqi army has collapsed. Well, the Iraqi people rallied themselves into militias, and that's where General Soleimani came in as an ally of the struggle against ISIS, because ISIS is an enemy of the Islamic Republic. By the way, ISIS has congratulated Trump on murdering General Soleimani. That doesn't make the front page of the Globe or the Star or the CBC. ISIS congratulated Trump on murdering the leader of the general, Iranian general. But so that's what transpired. So the United States now says, well, but the militias are, and this is a dirty word, this is neocolonialism. They say the militias are proxies of the Islamic Republic, proxies. Well, I would accept that if you would say that the King of Jordan is your proxy, if you would say that Netanyahu is your proxy, if you would say Sisi, President of Egypt, is your proxy, then we can talk about proxies. But if you're only talking, you are going to allege something that you definitely do against someone else, yeah, we get to talk about you. However, let's be frank about it. The Iraqi people do not want ISIS. They did not want Saddam. And they don't want Western powers. It was the United States that invaded them, destroyed their economy, took a pretty advanced largely secular society, destroyed it with deaths in the hundreds of thousands. And the process of destroying it was conducted by Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, the Madeleine Albright, very famous quote, we all cite it. She said, she was asked by CBS, it's been estimated that 500,000 children died in Iraq as a result of your policy due to the absence of nutrition, medicines, etc. Was it worth it? And her answer was, yes. Yes, it was worth it. So they did it. They destroyed Iraq. They were followed by a couple of Bushes who did it. And then we had Obama, who people said that Obama was going to undo that and make amends. He did not. The Abu Ghraib crime was covered up, frankly. The file fell into the hands of the Obama administration. They said they were going to close Guantanamo. He said on the first day of the job, right, Phil? You were there.
Right.
You remember.
We all remember.
You were not in the photo, but you were there. You watched it. I will close Guantanamo.
He said it during the campaign. He said it after he was elected. And he said it after he was sworn in.
And he did not do it.
He did not do
it. And he was in office for 8 years. Yeah. So that's why, you know, Canadians, we should be concerned here. There has to be some kind of recognition of what we're dealing with. And the question is, which side are you on? The peace has always been available. There was a nuclear agreement, and the Iranians signed it. That was one thing that Obama did. He got the peace agreement. Well, that's been ripped up, not by the Iranians, but by President Trump. So the conditions that we're in are a result of neocolonialism, a drive to war, and also the defeat of the effort. Now the clash, as we've talked on the show, is getting more serious. I believe you can attribute Trump's decision to strike at General Soleimani to the failure to defeat Syria. Under George Bush and under Obama, there was an all-out effort, just short of invasion, which we almost had, as you remember, the year 2013, another distant past thing. 2013, Obama said that he was going, I think it was December 2013, he was going to bomb Syria. But at that point, the British Parliament developed cold feet, and they said they wouldn't do that. They didn't think that was a good idea. So we had a little problem in the ranks, and probably Obama was glad that they pulled on his coat, because the problem about expanding wars is that you can actually get hurt yourself. We always imagine the other guy getting hurt, but you know, you do start to run higher and higher risk. A new factor in the world has been that we no longer have Yeltsin, we now have Putin. Putin has said, after the Libyan episode, famously wrote a piece for the New York Times. I urge everybody, go back and read it. He said, you told us you were not going to get involved in the civil war in Libya. You told us that you wanted to have a no-fly zone so just to protect civilians. But then you turned around and you became the Air Force for one side, and you bombed them, and you ended up with a destroyed society and the death of Muammar Gaddafi. That was outrageous. You lied to us. This is President Putin said that. And therefore, we no longer will give you carte blanche because we took your word for it. They took their word for it. So that's where they got us to. So we now we have a new situation where the U.S. cannot be so sure that if they do something adventurous in Syria or Iraq or with the Islamic Republic, that they won't be embroiled with Russia, because Russia says we don't agree with these things. Now, what happens when you say you don't agree? We're supposed to believe in Canada, but also even the United States and Britain, you're supposed to believe in diplomacy. You have a difference of opinion with a major power, you talk. The other option you don't want to think about. But I have to tell you, apparently in the White House and in Ottawa, there are people who think about it, and they push the envelope. So let's go back. The Iraqi parliament has asked Canada, along with the others, to leave. Are we going to leave or not? Are we for peaceful resolution of differences? You're an occupying power. You say there's a democracy. There's a parliament there. That parliament asks you to go. So are you now? What are you? Are you? And I haven't heard anything from Ottawa to indicate they're going to leave. Quite the contrary. Therefore, you're in a funny posture here. And so let's move to the matter of what has happened. We have two famous people in Canada have expressed their feelings. The Prime Minister has told us all, and I watched him, he said he's furious. I read he's furious about the shoot down, but he doesn't say who he's furious at. He leaves that really unconsummated, rather like him, by the way. And my guess is he's not sure who he's angry with because he's waiting for a call from Washington. But he says he's furious. And he would like some things to happen. But he says he'd like to see one good thing. He said, I would like de-escalation. And so I have to say about that, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5. He said that he wants a justice. I start with de-escalation. He wants de-escalation. Well, Donald Trump hasn't offered us de-escalation. Donald Trump committed an act of war by killing an Iranian official on Iraqi soil, thus causing the parliament to ask us to leave, which means that they think they have deeply offended by that act of war. Of course, Iran losing a commanding general said it's an act of war, and then Trudeau says he would like de-escalation. So why doesn't he say what he thinks of Donald Trump assassinating an Iranian general? He hasn't said. But he says to Iran, I want you to de-escalate. He also said at the time, and the defense minister of Canada said it, I watched him, he said in the statement regarding the need to de-escalate after the murder, assassination, by the way, Americans say we're not to use the word assassination, so I guess I'm breaking the rule. I don't know. But at any rate, after the assassination of General Soleimani, they said, Canada said, we regarded General Soleimani as a bad actor in Iraq, in the region. that was like an appendix. There's a three-sentence position saying bad things are happening. Is the situation is fraught with danger. No one wants a larger war. We ask the parties to de-escalate. Footnote. We regarded the general as a bad actor. He's not regarded anywhere else as a bad actor. Iraq, dear Canada, dear Defense Minister, dear Prime Minister, regarded him as a comrade in the fight against ISIS. Funny little footnote for our defense minister. Canada, during the last decade, has been providing what they call the military assistance to Iraq in the form of about 500, maybe 800 advisors. We ask on this show, what kind of a joke is it that Iraqis who've been fighting for 40 years, every generation and every age group, needs somebody who's been to high school in Alberta to come and give them advice on how to use a Tommy gun or whatever it is? Please, don't, you're pulling my leg. So anyhow, but they were there. And where were they? In the Kurdish region of Iraq. Scott Taylor, on the Taylor Report, told us, and in his writing he says, isn't it kind of interesting, we're providing military aid advice, and it's in the Kurdish region. He said, I have visited the Kurdish region, Scott Taylor, very good writer on military matters, former Canadian, I think he was an officer, I don't want to insult him, but I think he was an officer, advising in the Kurdish autonomous region, in other words, giving advice to Kurds who were calling for independence from Iraq. So you have to say, what are you guys up to exactly? Why aren't you helping the other Iraqis? But okay, let's come to the point. Mr. Barzani is the leader of that area, the autonomous region. Here's the word he used to describe General Soleimani. But remembering that Mr. Barzani is a close friend of, allegedly, of ours, he said, Soleimani was my comrade. General Soleimani was our comrade in the struggle against ISIS. So here's the Canadian defense minister who's been, you know, kind of fooling around with the Kurds in northern Iraq, and their leader says, he was my comrade, and our defense minister said he's a bad actor. Oh, really? You better straighten this all out. By the way, now we're supposedly in a situation with Iran where people say, well, we had people who were lost, their lives, citizens of Canada were killed when the Ukrainian plane was shot down. And we want to have access, and we want transparency. If you say to the Islamic Republic, we think your general, who was assassinated by the American president, was a bad actor, you're really going to be in a rather funny place if you think you're going to go and look at them and say, I want you to explain all the things you did. They'll say, let's explain to you something. Our commanding officer was killed, and we went on a war footing with the United States. Iran fired missiles at U.S. bases, and they struck their target just to show they could do that. It's called proportional response. Canada hasn't even commented on this other than to say, oh, please de-escalate. But it is serious when you lose a military commander. And so you're going to go there, Mr. Sajjan, with your, you know, and say to them, oh, we didn't like your general, and so he was a bad actor, but we've come to ask you a bunch of questions. Well, that's not a good starting point. That's kind of that's not a good opening line. That's not going to get you anything. Make up your mind. Which side are you on here? You on the side of the Iraqi people who, through their parliament, asked you to leave? Or are you some kind of neocolonial operation? Who are you kidding when you start this stuff? This is the Taylor Report. I think we're going to take a little musical break. We're going to come back and we're going to continue. We're going to talk about the other Canadian who is said he is furious. And I'm more in tune with him. He is the Michael McCain of the McCain Food. I'm not going to call it a monopoly. I feel like I ought to be nice to him today. But at any rate, major operation. He had something to say. He's furious too, but he knows who he's furious with. We have a song, I guess, by John Fogerty. That's John Fogerty. I ain't no. What is it? Again, it's Fortunate Son. He just told me. I love this. Thank you. Fortunate Son. And, well, okay. I said Michael McCain has tweeted. And describe him, Phil. Who is Michael McCain?
Michael McCain is the CEO of Maple Leaf Foods, which is a food conglomerate that grew out of McCain Foods, which he's from that family.
What did he say?
He said, "I'm Michael McCain." This is in a tweet. "CEO of Maple Leaf Foods, and these are personal reflections. I am very angry, and time isn't making me less angry. A Maple Leaf Foods colleague of mine lost his wife and family this week to a needless, irresponsible series of events in Iran. U.S. government leaders, unconstrained by checks and balances, concocted an ill-conceived plan to divert focus from political woes. The world knows Iran is a dangerous state, but the world found a path to contain it. Not perfect, but by most accounts, it was the right direction. A narcissist in Washington tears world accomplishments apart, destabilizes region. U.S. now unwelcomed everywhere in the area, including Iraq. Tensions escalated to feverish pitch. Taking out despicable military leader terrorist? There are 100 like him standing next in line." So that is...
Go on, there's further.
Oh, there's one more. "The collateral damage of this irresponsible, dangerous, ill-conceived behavior? 63 Canadians needlessly lost their lives in the crossfire, including the family of one of my Maple Leaf Foods colleagues, his wife and 11-year-old son. Mm-hmm. We are mourning, and I am livid." Signed, Michael McCain.
Yes. Now, you see, he knows that you can say that the U.S. started this. The prime minister cannot say that because he would be kaput.
Can the NDP say it, at least?
Oh, no. You know, the NDP...
I'm sorry. They are very... Shouldn't have mentioned it. Sorry.
They are steeped in guruishness, and so the gurus tell each other very clever, legal, peculiar things that could be explained in a sociology paper, and therefore will sign on with NATO and bomb the shit out of anybody gets in their way. roughly. No, they're just criminally stupid and gutless would be probably the best. Utterly gutless, which is why we need demonstrations in the streets, and apparently we're going to have them because people are getting more and more unhappy. Like Michael McCain of Maple Leaf, is it Maple Farm?
Maple Leaf Foods.
Maple Leaf Foods.
Yes.
People see this. They're not blind. I really miss Farley Mowat, by the way, who used to really explode when these things happened, because he knew he was living in an empire, within an empire system, and it made him mad. He didn't like to see small countries crushed just because they spoke back to the superpower. So good for Michael McCain. I'm sure he's going to get a lot of grief for this, but I think he's probably truly outraged, there's going to be a lot of damage because people get beaten up for differing. I mean, politically, economically, and otherwise. He might get sanctioned for all I know. Trump is a very touchy character, and as we all know, which is another reason for the prime minister's tiptoeing around subjects. Look, in the case of Iran, we have a problem because we don't have an embassy. The embassy was closed by Harper. Everybody claimed they thought Harper was a fool, but the embassy remains closed. Had that embassy been open and functioning, among the things it might have said on the date that the plane was to fly, we notify Canadian passengers, probably not a good idea to fly today. They might have said that. It might have even gone out the airport and said it. That's governments do that. But if you're not there, you're not able to. You're also, the reason you have an embassy is not because you love the country. It means because you want to be able to service your citizens who might be in that country, also to enable possible communications and to guarantee that you understand the country that you're talking about. The Islamic Republic is a country of, I believe, now 80 million people. It's a very advanced culture and civilization. It is also one of the countries that stands in the way of U.S.-British desires in the Middle East. Oops, I started to say Middle East. We're banning that now. West Asia, we're going to use the new liberation language. They stand in the way in West Asia to U.S. hegemony. And is it a secret? No, it's not a secret. The United States says it wants regime change in the Islamic Republic. That is wrong. It means that you will have nothing but trouble, and it also means that you suffer from imperial arrogance. There really isn't any other word for it. They also want to remember regime change in Syria. They said so. The President of the United States announced, that was Obama, the liberal, that President Assad should step down. He said no. So then they threw everything they could at him. This is why we have to address it. What is going to be the posture of Canada? Of course, Americans should be very concerned about their government. I'd say, by the way, there's more opposition in the United States than in Canada to Trump's adventurous foreign policy. It's developing in an awkward way, as you would expect, but there are voices. Tulsi Gabbard was hung in there. But when you're in the U.S. political culture and they put you on television, boy, you get a blast. And so she said, after the shootdown of the plane and after there was the acknowledgement by the Islamic Republic that they were themselves responsible, they thought, okay, Tulsi, so flip. And she said, no, the person who caused this is Donald Trump and this current administration. Because had they not decided to have this extracurricular form of warfare, murdering an official of another government, this all would not have unfolded. That's absolutely true. And when other countries say, well, we don't want to see problems between the two of you, my point earlier, and I'll repeat it, is you have to come down the middle. You can't say Soleimani was a bad guy, but I want the two of you to get along. Unfortunately, you've joined the war party. That's where we are. You decided to go over to the side of the war party by slandering an Iranian general. The claim that he took American lives has never been demonstrated anywhere. By the way, the claim that he was planning, responsible for plans against the U.S. embassies has been, unfortunately for Donald Trump and the United States administration, undermined by the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Esper, said he knows of no such plans. No such plans. So, it's in other words, let's call it a mood swing led to the assassination, which has, that the war danger has not been removed. And it's we have a clip we're going to play here in a moment, but I want to introduce it properly. This would be, we're going to be playing George Walker Bush. Is it George Walker?
George Herbert Walker Bush.
Oh, yeah, this, yeah, the man George, with three names.
Hey, man with three names.
Oh, you want to look out for guys with three names. Yeah. But that's a proverb. Yeah. Look out for guys with three names. George Walker. George, what's the other one?
Herbert. George Herbert Walker Bush.
Wow. Phil knows, Conlon knows a little too much about this guy. And I kind of like not knowing every name, but anyway, we're going to talk about what he has to say on the matter of responsibility for shooting down civilian aircraft. But what is remarkable, and a Canadian general said it, he was on one of the talk shows, they've got all kinds of people. So the general said, they said, well, what do you think about the Iranian military saying they did this? And he said, I was shocked, I was surprised. Well, of course he's surprised, because the culture he comes from doesn't apologize and never admits anything. They don't admit anything. They just do things. Do you remember that there was a Cuban plane shot down by terrorists based in Florida? And they all ended up, the murderers who shot down the Cuban plane, or put a bomb on it, retired up to hero status in Miami. Nobody bothered them. They were patted on the back. They turned up at Ronald Reagan rallies. Ronald Reagan himself had made an attempt on the life of Muammar Gaddafi, destroyed his home. And in the home was, a 4-year-old child. And so the child was described as a stepdaughter, an adopted daughter. And so at the press briefing, either Wolfowitz or one of the other wolves was asked, well, Gaddafi didn't get killed, but the adopted daughter was killed. So the joke he made was, oh, we didn't see the adoption papers. They killed her, blew up his house. That was Ronald Reagan, not Donald Trump, by the way. This idea that Trump is the only guy that does this stuff, baloney. They all do it. Every Thursday, according to the New York Times, every Thursday morning, Obama would meet with CIA people to go down the list of targets to be killed by drones every Thursday. And they say he looked forward to it. I think there is a kind of, I hate to say it, to kind of, there's a, something in the adrenaline, whatever it is, that gets a kick out of being able to do that kind of thing. Just circle a name and the guy disappears. Two of those were American citizens who should have enjoyed the protection of the American Constitution, right to a trial, proof that they'd committed a crime. By the way, notice all the alarm signals we have run through everywhere. No one ever says that anymore. Now that you've done it, it's like, okay, now we're going to run through every stop sign. You know, there's supposed to be a stop sign. That's an American citizen you're about to kill in Yemen. They kill him anyway. And his son was killed because he ran to help his father. They had a second shot. He got the son. Also American citizen. They said, well, is that okay? Pause. I guess so. So we will all go merrily forward. So, and where is Canada's gumption? Where is its integrity? I got an old-fashioned word. Where is the honor around here? No, nobody has any honor. So, going back to the Iranians, they said they had done that. They said, oh, yeah, but it took them 3 days. Well, you know, when you have a war climate and where you're not sure what the game is when things are happening, it's something you take your time to figure out. And at any rate, they came out, came clean. The man who says he was most responsible said, I wish I had been on the plane. Probably a lot of other people wish he had been, because it was a decision that was disastrous. And it's true that it happened at what they call the fog of war danger, where their Iranian military spotted something with a profile. They say it has the same, what they saw had the same profile as a drone, and they had a matter of seconds. They did it. Well, that's hideous what happened. But here's, as the Canadian officer said, he's surprised. Well, yeah, because he comes from a culture where they don't admit. And certainly nobody falls on their sword around here anymore. Nobody ever says, hey, I did that and I'm ashamed. I'm going to sacrifice myself. No. Everybody gets promoted. You do bad things, you get promoted. Let me go to Vincennes. That's an American battleship sailing in the Persian Gulf off the Iranian coast, 1988, June. An Iranian civilian aircraft, regularly scheduled flight, takes off from southern Iran to go across the Gulf to what was for the passengers to be a shopping trip. Because there are shops, there are places, and I'm not sure, probably was Dubai, someplace like that. That's where they were going. Regularly scheduled flight, ordinary flight plan. The ships in the region all are informed of traffic. It was not a new flight. Nothing unusual happened, except the captain of the Vincennes ordered it to be shot out of the air. He said, well, I thought it was an enemy aircraft, and I put my ship at risk, so I shot it down. And they all lied, by the way. They said that it was wrong at a different, wrong altitude. It was off course. It was not properly. All that turned out to be baloney. There was nothing exceptional about it. My memory is that 290 Iranians died, shot out of the air by the Vincennes. Now, people, and by the way, right away, the Americans used the statement that there was a fog of war situation. Okay, here's your problem. There was no war. The United States was not privy, not part of the war. Iraq was making war with Iran. This is 1988. Iraq, with U.S. support, U.S. weapons, particularly chemical weapons, look it up, chemical weapons supplied to Saddam Hussein by guess who? Washington, the Pentagon. He was making war on the Islamic Republic. The Vincennes never said that there was, nobody in the U.S. Navy said that there was a war between the United States and Islamic Republic. So that act had nothing to do. There was no war. They simply shot it out of the air. So then we move to what happened. The United States never apologized. Did not apologize. And compensation, years and years later, was paid like you would an insurance company, but there was no acknowledgement of wrongdoing. It was called an error. And the captain of the ship was given a medal, and the other officers on that ship were given medals, and that's how they handled that. So George Bush, President Bush, was asked, "Well, don't you think that an apology would be appropriate?" And we have a quote. We have a recording of him answering.
I'll never apologize for the United States of America, ever. I don't care what the facts are. I will lead her. I will do my level best to stand up for freedom and democracy around the world by keeping the United States of America strong and by keeping our eyes wide open. as we welcome change in the world, but keeping our eyes wide open.
You want to contrast that, because this is, involves honor. This is not a word that comes up again any longer. President Trump recently pardoned a Navy SEAL who had been convicted by his peers of crimes against American law of mistreating a prisoner, and he was pardoned. I got to hand it to him. If you want to demoralize your military, that's the way to do it. Because if you, they all take an oath to uphold the military code of justice. I did that. And you are, that makes, it gives you pride because it says, I'm not going to break the law. I'm not going to be arguing the way the German soldiers did while I was just following orders, right? So built into the new moral code is you can't say that. You're supposed to, it has to be a lawful order. But they did it. And now Trump says, not only do I pardon him, he gets to come to my political rallies. And the guy, this petty officer, who actually made fun of the Navy brass who had prosecuted him, he called them a bunch of egotists and cowards or phonies or whatever he chose to do. And this is a petty officer who committed a crime prosecuted by the United States Navy, pardoned by Trump. So I'd say, well, if you want to destroy your military, that's the way to do it. Just tell them that you don't have any ethics, that law doesn't matter to you one bit. Another matter that has to be talked about in my mind is in this thing is the question of saying we want justice and how thirsty we are for justice and how we're going to get justice in this situation of the where the Iran has acknowledged that they did this. We have 320 passengers on Air India flight that were blown out of the sky, and their bodies fell into the Atlantic Ocean, and they were Canadians, and they have been wanting justice. They wanted to know what happened. So Canada, the perpetrators, alleged perpetrators of the Air India bombing were Canadians. The bomb was assembled on Canadian soil. The bomb was placed aboard the planes inside Canada. You might want to know what happened. One man was pled guilty to manslaughter and is free, of course. One pled guilty. Two alleged leading perpetrators charged, by the way, 15 years later. Count the years. 15 years later, were acquitted, which is to say nobody was found guilty. And so you want to, I would say to the Prime Minister, approach this subject with a little humility. If you're going to talk to the Islamic Republic, you might explain to them, you had a lot of trouble deciding how to get justice for the 290 people died as a result of a terrorist act allegedly perpetrated and organized on Canadian soil, and which there finally a report was written 20 years later by a judge who said that the RCMP and CSIS had failed because they had been aware that there was a group planning acts of terror, bombings. They knew they existed. They recorded their voices. Hundreds of recordings. Where are the recordings? They were destroyed. They were deleted by someone at either CSIS or the RCMP. So we don't have them anymore. So when you talk about, oh, you want justice, well, before those people, and you should ask for it, go right ahead. But remember that the passengers on Air India, their families, that's 290 Canadians. They wanted justice. None of the organizers were convicted. Two acquittals. One pled guilty to manslaughter, was later accused of, in doing so, was accused of false evidence. So I would say, probably, my guess, I'm just going to take a wild guess, that the families, the loved ones, the Canadians, feel that they didn't get justice. And I know Bob Ray wrote a report. You try and read it. It's, you know, but it, they said that Trudeau called Bob Ray and asked him, well, what should I do? He said, oh, be sure that you talk to the families. Well, how about the justice part of it? How about bringing the perpetrators to account? Incidentally, the Islamic Republic has named some of the perpetrators already. One of the guys named himself in the sense that he said, I'm the guy. Somebody to compliment here is President of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky. I predict something. Zelensky's going to be in big trouble with the Canadian government and others, because Zelensky committed the prima sin of getting elected by 70% against Canada's favorite man, Poroshenko, the chocolate man. They call him the chocolate oligarch, right? He looked like a chocolate president to me. But Mr. Zelensky, his administration, contacted the Islamic Republic. They were welcomed, let's point this out, immediately. So there wasn't a cover-up, because Ukrainians went there and were working on their report. That's when suddenly Trump, Boris Johnson, and Trump and Trudeau all said, oh, well, it was probably an accident shot down. Zelensky said, please, I'm not ruling that out, but we do have an investigation. You know, when leaders say these things, you can't change it. I mean, it's like, so it, everybody said, oh, we want the truth. Well, you can't have the truth if you keep shouting in the window of the guy who's trying to do the investigation. The Ukrainians were on the scene and have gathered the evidence. They've said something important. I want to ask Trudeau if he's going to go with this. Zelensky says, if you have information, share it with us. So far, these people who talked about this haven't shared, but they say they want to go and interrogate the Islamic leaders of the Islamic Republic. You're not going to get the first base. This is our bottom line on this issue. If you don't have mutual respect, if you do not treat the government of Iran as a government, not a regime, a government, if you don't wish to treat them as a government, you're not going to get the first base. And that's where we have to follow the line of, is Prime Minister going to go with Boris and Donald, or are we going to have an independent path? And I would say, apropos of Air India, be humble and don't stumble. You use a little more respect, since the Air India thing was bungled from top to bottom, and there is no satisfaction, and no justice was ever received by the families. We all are sympathetic to the families. Air India, 290 Canadian citizens, they were not satisfied. And the perpetrators there is no conviction of the perpetrators, though everyone agrees that the action took place, was organized, and took place here. And then contrast it with how the United States says it shot down an Iranian airliner. And as we heard from the president, the old Bush, he didn't care. I mean, he's not going to apologize to anybody. So you want to be aligned. Oh, and that raises the word civilization. Trump uses the word civilization. It's a little funny coming out of his mouth. The question is Canada civilized? Because the civilized leadership of the Islamic Republic has taken responsibility, but you are dealing with, in Washington, people who say they don't have to apologize to anybody. So those are your allies. And I got news for you. You and your allies, if that's who you're allied with, you're being beaten in Iraq, You're being beaten in Syria. And if you put your nose into the Islamic Republic, you'll be beaten there. And if you want to take on Mr. Putin, boy, I got bad news for you. That's And there's one last, we got to go one, but I would just say, the two Libyan armies that have been fighting have just resolved their differences, guess where? In Moscow. They went to meet Putin and resolved their differences in Libya. This has been the Taylor Report. See you next week.